Hello and welcome to this podcast produced by the Northern Region of the University and College Union. My name is John Bryan, and coming up in this episode, I'll be speaking to one of our union representatives who's been dealing with a member who has been transitioning from one gender to another. Now, dealing with a piece of casework like this is quite a sensitive issue, and we already have done some top tips on representing members in previous podcasts. See, for example, Series 2, Episode 8, where we look at some of the basics and some of the top tips that we've got on representing members. Now, in this particular case, we look at someone who has transitioned and what the representative can do to help them navigate some of the processes which their employer has in place. Enjoy the podcast. Okay, well, I'm joined now by Joe, one of our UCU representatives in the Northern Region. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm doing very well, thanks, John. It's nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming back onto the podcast. And I know we're going to talk specifically about a case where you've been dealing with helping one of our members who's been transitioning. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered if you could just talk us through how that kind of started off and the sorts of things that you started to do to assist the member in this case.
Sure. I think, the first thing I'd say is that in many respects, I'm actually the worst person to be talking about this, being a white, middle-aged, cisgender male. So I hope that anybody listening doesn't think that I'm in a position where I'm telling people what to do in this position, because I'm very much learning myself. Basically, when it started was the member got in touch with me after they had transitioned to ask about representing them when they meet with HR, because, of course, HR meetings tend to happen in kind of what you might say is less supportive incidents, where it tends to be a bit adversarial. And they were also worried about how HR would respond to their transition and whether or not they'd forget things and if I could be there as note taker. So that was kind of how we started. And what I found actually was and it's rare for me to say this, I've got to admit, that HR were extremely proactive and very helpful. And they clearly had a number of things set up from quite some time ago to assist with not necessarily the transition process itself, but how the institution responds to it. So they've got an action plan set up. And one of the things in this action plan, which both of us, the member and myself, thought was extremely helpful, was having dates in there that they would do things and a clear outline of what HR can do, what the line manager can do, what the UCU rep can do, and what the member concerned does. And that was a really good starting point, because it first of all, it made the member feel happy, and it also made me feel happy that I could be part of a kind of quite a long-term process. So I think that's the first thing that I kind of observed. And one of the things that kind of struck me was that I was talking with the member about the things that had to be changed, like nameplates, pigeonholes, doors, photographs in and around campus, the website and stuff like that, but that the university had already set up key contacts in various departments to aid with this. So there was a key contact in IT, in HR, in payroll, and in marketing. And that was actually a really, really good thing, because then the person or the member concerned simply had somebody to phone up or call if there was something that needed to be done in a certain area. So if they're, if they were still receiving their pay slips with their old name on it, or if there was some sort of message coming from a certain part of the university that was still addressed to their old name, changing their email addresses and so on. And whilst it was kind of frustrating in many respects that the systems didn't necessarily talk to each other, that they said that there isn't one thing where they could click and everything changes, it was good to know that they'd minimize the number of people that the member concerned had to speak to, because they were aware that speaking to lots and lots of people about life-changing thing like this might actually be quite difficult. So there was only one person there to speak to, and straight away they could get through to them, and that they will stay with that person, so to speak, for 12 months to make sure that all of the loose ends are tied up. So I kind of think that was the good thing that we started with.
And I think I'm right in saying as well that a lot of this was taking place over the summer period with a view to kind of making sure that the academic year or the new academic year started with, you know, the new name and the new contact details and stuff like that. So I suppose the time frame had to be quite tight in certain respects.
Yeah, that's right. And HR said that what normally happened is they had a few months the ideal situation would be that the individual concerned would inform the institution a few months before, but you know, that doesn't necessarily, you know, that's not the way the real world works. We know that members might take their time over these things, but you know, the key thing for me was that even though we were talking in a truncated time period, that the university worked very, very quickly to make sure that by the day that the students arrived, everything was changed, so that there was no kind of sense for the returning students that there was a transition. This was essentially the member of staff's identity, and that was actually really helpful. And what they did is they made sure that communications to departmental colleagues, key people in the faculty, all went out at such a time that the member concerned was comfortable with, and so that all of those changes could be in place, so that when, let's say, open days occur, the new name is there on the staff list, so that when students receive their packs for the new modules, etc., the new name was there, and all of those things. So there was actually they had a real sense that this is not just, as we'd kind of thought about, just changing the odd name here and there. They covered an awful load of the bases.
So that's some quite useful tips about having key contacts and minimising the number of people that you have to speak to in order to get some things done. And I noticed that the university policy is quite supportive in the way in which it has an overview of what it does. So it says the university is committed to ensuring that transsexual people are treated with dignity and respect, and that it does not discriminate unlawfully. This commitment is an important aspect of the overall commitment to providing equality of opportunity in employment. So I suppose some of the overall kind of policy guidelines are quite helpful. I mean, in what way do you think they were helpful, and you know, how do you think that kind of manifested into the practical things that the university did?
Well, I think the first one was that the overarching issue of support and inclusion and anti-discriminatory practice was really, really helpful for the member. You know, there was particularly, you know, one of the obvious conversations we had was about the use of bathrooms and when they were going to change using single-sex facilities. And this was very much, it's ended up because of that policy being a very much a matter of fact conversation. And the question was, at what date will you be using same-sex facilities? And they said, I'm going to start using them on this date. And the agreement was set in stone there and then. And I felt that this was very, very helpful, both for the member, but also in terms about challenging those anti-trans narratives that are building in society. And, you know, the issue of bathrooms, single-sex facilities, is kind of a hot-button issue with certain groups who were trying to use the Equality Act to prevent trans people from entering single-sex spaces that don't align to their birth sex. And a minor thing you might think in the context of the conversation, but became a really powerful thing in our kind of awareness that the university was behind the member. And they said explicitly, if you encounter any trouble, let us know, and what we'll do are these things. So they said that they had previously been in touch with members of the security service who had challenged another member of staff who'd previously transitioned, who was going into single-sex facilities. So they said, well, you know, we can send around another email just reminding people about that, and we can offer training opportunities to staff in your area, in other areas, just to make sure that everybody's aware of what the university's position is and what the rights are of every individual in the university, and also what our responsibilities are to each other to create an environment in which everybody feels supported and not discriminated against. So I thought that was actually really, really helpful, and has prompted us to think as well about, you know, the issue of harassment on social media, and the university have somebody who they can, who the member can contact, so they can keep an eye on any kind of social media commentary from students and maybe outside influences that might cause undue stress to the individual. So there's quite a lot going on there that overarching policy really, really enforces, and it is actually quite powerful in enforcing.
I think that's really good to hear. And, you know, yourself dealing with a case like this, which, you know, as you say right at the start, can be a bit daunting at times. So the fact that the university was there and had systems in place was, you know, very, very helpful. Are there any other things that, you know, that the line manager's done, or that the university's kind of encouraged to, you know, help the member kind of in this transition period?
Well, the line manager was brilliant, because they took a screwdriver to the old nameplate and pulled it off themselves, which was a great example of individual initiative. But on a more serious level, they were extremely helpful with workloads, because the member said that they, you know, because the transition is fairly recent, they didn't feel particularly comfortable in one-to-one situations with students. So let's say, for example, in a personal tutee situation, or dissertation guidance and that sort of thing. And they said, no problem whatsoever. You know, we've got your workload here. We'll reassign students that would have been assigned to you as dissertation supervisor to somebody else, and we'll fill up the workload with something that you do feel comfortable with. And, you know, again, this comes down to the university's overarching policy of anti-discriminatory practice, and also kind of the reasonable adjustments that we make on a day-to-day basis. And this, we all agreed, was a reasonable adjustment in the short term. The member concerned didn't say they never wanted to do dissertation supervision, but they said just at this moment in time, it didn't feel like the right thing. And there was a quick pivot. And again, everything was sorted out very, very amicably and very, very supportively. So, you know, again, it comes back to that overarching policy.
Well, this is really helpful, Joe, for anyone listening who has potentially got a case like this coming up, or, you know, might have one in the future. Are there things that you've got a lot of experience of dealing with cases in general at the university. Are there some things which, you know, people can learn from you about your experiences and about how you kind of dealt with it? What sort of top tips have you got for people?
I think the member concerned might have slightly different things to say, but I think most importantly, I had to be open with them and said, I've done casework before, but I've never represented somebody in this case. Do you mind if I ask other people who've got experience? And they were happy with me doing that and saying that. And that's, so I got in touch with Region. I asked a few other reps to see what they said. And then I also said to the member, look, you know, I may well make mistakes. And that actually, they said, that's fine. You know, and knowing that made me feel a little more secure about doing things and asking questions and so on. So I think that first in the top tips is ask around for some sort of assistance if possible. You know, I think we will be seeing increasing numbers of such sort of casework over the coming years, and eventually we'll get better and better at dealing with it. You know, and of course, members are a really good resource. So if you know members who have experience of those sort of things, it is worth asking. The problem, of course, is that because transition is such a private, such a fraught experience, you can't necessarily name names. but still there are some sort of general questions you can ask. And I think the other thing I would say is stay with the member. You know, the university's good practice was making sure there were named contacts throughout, and having me as the named contact is helpful for the member, you know, and once they actually had announced it to everybody else, it was a little more easy for them. But I think still having that one person there who's been there through the start of the process right through to the, you know, the ongoings, so to speak, has been really helpful.
That's really good. That's really good advice for people. And, you know, one last question for you in relation to UCU. Mm-hmm. You've talked about, you know, people changing their name and the email address at the university and things like that. How easy was it for the member to change their contact details and everything else on the UCU membership system?
It was probably the most simple process of all. You know, you simply head onto MyUCU, go to your membership record, and you can change everything with the click of a couple of mouse clicks. And Bob is your uncle, and all of that sort of thing. It was very, very simple, in stark contrast to some of the things like changing your pension with the pension firm and all those sort of things. Very, very simple.
Right, that's great to hear. And thanks very much for coming onto the podcast and to talking to us about this. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Good to speak to you, John.
Thanks for listening to this episode. We hope that you've enjoyed the content. Please don't forget to like, favourite, or subscribe to this podcast in whichever app you use. Also, leave us a rating and a review. It helps other people find this show. Please also share this episode and tell others on social media about the podcast that we do. You can find more resources on dealing with equality issues, such as the ones that we've discussed in this podcast, by going to ucu.org.uk/equality. Thanks for listening.